School's out for the summer, but with no teachers and no books, will your kids really remember things when it comes fall?
They've actually been forgetting all of that good stuff they learned this past year.
Really fearful for a lot of parents.
All those scary statistics, literally, like your kids lose 60% of what
they learn. Experts call it summer brain drain.
Brain drain.
Brain drain.
How to prevent the summer brain drain.
We get a little freaked out. What do you do?
Well, if you consume media, there's a good chance you're already familiar with the idea that kids tend to lose ground academically during the summer months. But what is the so-called summer brain drain? Does it have any scientific basis? And just how concerned should you be? It all depends on who you ask.
We know from decades of research that students come back in the fall about a month behind where they were in the spring. And so schools spend a month or so at the beginning of the school year reviewing material that the students had already grasped.
Catherine Augustine is a Pittsburgh-based researcher with the RAND Corporation, which has just launched a two-year national study on summer learning programs that seek to combat those effects. Augustine is also a co-author of a RAND report from last year that acknowledges the reality of brain drain, but also emphasizes its socioeconomic dimension. Yes, she says most classrooms have to play catch-up in the fall.
I mean, that's inefficient, but the main problem is that low-income students lose ground, on average, in reading and literacy-related skills over the summer, whereas, on average, middle and higher income students maintain where they were in the spring or even gain ground over the summer.
But the language of brain drain may be somewhat misleading. While academic performance clearly suffers, so far there's little clinical research to support the notion that children actually lose cognitive muscle during the break. That's why experts prefer terms like summer learning loss or summer setback.
We know that being exposed to more vocabulary words, more words in general, and higher level words at an early age does something in children's brains. It helps them to make more connections. So you could hypothesize then that that same phenomenon is happening in the summer.
So yes, summer setback is real, and researchers and policymakers do have serious concerns about how economic inequality amplifies its effects at a macro level. It's even more concerning when you consider the long-range implications for things like crime rates and unemployment. But what about for individuals? Do Pittsburgh parents have valid cause for concern that their kids will fall behind?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, they enjoy summer. They play. They run around outside.
That's Nicole Lott. Her son, Caden, is finishing first grade at Greenfield Elementary, and he's approaching what may be, developmentally speaking, the most critical 3 months of his academic career.
We're learning doubles. 10 plus 10 equals 20, and 20 plus 20.
Those addition tables are exactly the type of hard-won knowledge that the research says is most likely to slip away during the interval between school years, regardless of income level. Caden's big sister, Lexi, a fifth grader at Mifflin Elementary, has been there.
Last year, like in fourth grade, we were always doing multiplication, and I knew all my 12 tables, but then when I came back to school, I had a hard time remembering them.
Unlike reading, Augustine says the loss of math skills is more or less universal across socioeconomic status groups. She says that's probably because those skills are so dependent upon sustained formal instruction.
The hypothesis is that parents aren't drilling kids with flashcards in math over the summer.
That's easy enough to understand. For the Lott kids, cracking a book is a pretty natural thing to do on a lazy summer day. But their mom says she sometimes struggles to come up with other kinds of learning opportunities.
We do experiments like what the Mentos and the Diet Coke.
That
was fun. I mean, come on. Really educational. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely harder to do that. And it would also definitely be harder to get them to sit down and probably do a math worksheet than it is to read a book.
And for families where neither math nor reading is part of the natural rhythm of summer, it's that much harder. Those are the students University of Pittsburgh child psychologist Elizabeth Vitruba-Drizal is most interested in. Her research happens at the intersection of education and poverty, where the problem is often much bigger than flashcards and summer camps.
High exposure to traffic, to noise, to violence, to things in their everyday environments, lead exposure. So it's both that stuff, but it's also access to stimulating and engaging conversations with other kids and with adults.
The Lotts may not be wealthy, but they're avid readers, and their small house is packed with books. Perhaps more importantly, it's on a quiet street in a safe area, and their family life is stable. Lexi and Caden stay busy with activities year-round. They exercise, travel, and play in their wooded backyard. But for their less privileged classmates in the Pittsburgh public school system, those conditions have to be manufactured, and there are several competing ideas for how best to do that. One is year-round schooling, or a modified school calendar with shorter breaks built in at regular intervals. But Catherine Augustine at RAND says the idea of year-round classes is still deeply unpopular.
It's expensive. Parents don't want it. There are a lot of employers who hire teenagers during the summer, and they don't want year-round school.
That may be just as well, says Pitt's Vatruba Drizal, because year-round schooling poses a real risk of burnout that can become counterproductive. Far better, she says, to keep students busy but entertained. That's part of the reasoning behind Pittsburgh's Summer Dreamers Academy, which combines elements of classroom instruction with outdoor activities and other informal learning opportunities. It's one of five programs nationwide selected for the new RAND study. The approach isn't just more cost-effective. Researchers think it may also help build emotional and social skills that will keep kids actively engaged throughout the year. Those kinds of outcomes may initially be difficult to measure and potentially even harder to justify in terms of standardized testing, but if the research bears out the theory, it could eventually pay dividends for grades, graduation rates, achievement gaps, and yes, even test scores. But returning to the so-called brain drain and the question of how concerned we should be, Vatruba Drizal says there are really two answers. On the one hand, it's an important piece of a larger picture that should worry all of us.
I think it's important with summer setback to have the broader context of what's happening in our country right now with respect to socioeconomic disparities in kids' development and their long-term life chances. And it really should be alarming to people.
At the same time, she says, the parents who tend to be most rattled by the idea of summer brain drain, those who enforce daily flashcard drills and fret about getting their kids into the right summer camps, are generally also those who have the least to be worried about.
So from that standpoint, I think the extent to which it sort of engenders anxiety and these sorts of things in parents, it's kind of ridiculous, I have to say. Yeah.
By all indications, the Lott children will be fine. Lexi has her summer books all picked out, and she likes math and science well enough that she's open to doing a few refreshers, in moderation, of course.
Not like every day, not like a school assignment, but every once in a while it could help.
And her brother Caden is not overthinking it.
Maybe I can bring a book to every time when I go to the pool. In case I want to dry off a little, I can just read a book.
For 90.5 WESA News, I'm Josh Rollerson.